Okay, well, first of all, I want to thank Ratnagosa for inviting me, and also because without Ratnagosa, actually, I wouldn't be still working in a team-based right livelihood, because if Ratnagosa hadn't bought a shop for Friends Foods, the business he used to manage in London many years ago, Lama's Pajamas wouldn't now be in that shop, if you see what I mean. So it's because of Ratnagosa's great business skill and foresight to buy a shop that even though Friends Organic, Friends Foods eventually, you know, came to an end, when Lama's Pajamas was the vision for it came into being, there was a shop there already. So I really wanted to just emphasise that I wouldn't be there if it hadn't been for him. And I also wanted to just say that I also feel I've learned a lot about working in teams from Ratnagosa. I was on a lot of big winter retreat teams with him, and he often looked after the team. And one of the things that I really remember about Ratnagosa is one particular winter retreat when there was a lot of snow. And he was always the first one up in the morning, and he always shoveled all the snow. I'm sure you know this about him, but just in case you don't, I just wanted to really rejoice in his, just him being such a good team player and how much I appreciate that. And all that I've learned from him. And also, it's lovely to see so many people here that I know from London, and also so many of you that have actually worked in teams. Some of you for many more years than me who could be up here giving this talk. But anyway, it's me. So, and my talk's actually called Spreading the Mushrooms. So I've already mentioned snow shoveling, and now we're spreading mushrooms. But anyway, before that, I'm just going to say, well, as Ratnagosa said, that team-based right livelihood is one of the distinctive emphases in Sri Ratna. And, well, you could say it's been very much a learning and experimentation, which is still going on. It's not finished, that's for sure. Because I'm one of the people still doing it. But I suppose what they've been attempting to do, or at least what Bante's vision has been, was to create a new society. And team-based right livelihood was very much an attempt to do that, actually affecting society through work, creating a new society, and attempting to develop a more ethical economy and a more ethical way of working. And, I still think, as I said, it's still early days in some ways. Quite a few team-based right livelihoods, came into being. Some of them lasted a long time and then they're no longer here. But even though they're not here, I just really want to celebrate all those team-based right livelihoods and all those pioneers and people who did try and, work together in teams, because I think team-based right livelihood, one of the great things about it is it helps to build sangha and community. There are lots of opportunities to practice, and they gave birth to many order members. They forged lifelong friendships. They had a positive effect on the world, and I think they are still affecting the world. Abhayanandi, who I currently work with, set up Lama's Pajamas. It was her vision. And one of the things that she said in a recent talk she gave on a Women's National Order weekend was that the women at the cherry orchard, or wild cherry, provided for her the fourth sight in terms of work. So they provided an alternative way of working. And even though by the time she came to actually want to set up a team, the Wild Cherry, the business that I used to work in, wasn't going anymore, she still remembered that and wanted to try and work in that kind of way. So I thought that was interesting. And the other interesting thing is I still get quite a lot of people in Bethnal Green, because I've been living there for the last, oh, I don't know, a long time, maybe well over 25 years, I still get people coming up to me and saying, will you start another cafe? We really miss the lunches. I mean, in fact, recently I was walking down Roman Road and there was this car was beeping its horn at me for some time, and I looked at the passengers and I thought, I don't know you. And then, you know, a day or two later, the same two people I met walking down the street, and it was a mother and daughter who used to come to the Cherry. And, you know, this was maybe 15 years ago, and at first I thought, I don't know if I recognise you. But they remembered me, and they said, we still miss the baked potatoes. So, you know, you just don't know what kind of effect you have, really. And lots of people talk of the golden days of Wild Cherry, and I think there were golden days there where things did flow, things did... We did practice the team-based right livelihood as fully as possible, and in those, yeah, in some of those moments, it was like a dance, like a flow of energy between people, and it wasn't as if there were all these different people. It was just like one team working together. I also think that new things are being seeded. Something I've been interested in recently at the LBC, which I think's great, is... there's a new sort of right livelihood, and it's been seeded in a bit of a different way. It was started by a mitra called Philippe, and I've met him briefly, I think, but I don't really know him. But apparently on his mitra statement, he wrote, I'm Philippe, and I'm an entrepreneur. And basically, he set up this business called Mojo Boxes, and it's vegan food, which he delivers to people in the city, and he's now got three mitras, including himself, working there. He gives 50% of his profits to the LBC, and they have the five precepts as part of their mission statement. So I've been really very struck by that, and I think, oh, that's a really good sign, and maybe that's a way that we can encourage people. There are probably lots of entrepreneurs out there, and maybe we can, you know, still share and give our experience, you know, to them where needed. Although maybe they don't need it in terms of the entrepreneur. But so I guess there probably used to be about 25 or even 30 team-based right livelihoods. Now there's probably more like about 6. So there are less. But I thought what I'd do tonight is say a little bit about the functions of team-based right livelihood, a little bit about the four Sanghavastus, which are ways of building Sangha, because the two very neatly overlap. And then I thought I'd say a bit, and you know, and apply that to Lama's Pajamas as well, where I'm currently working. And then I'd say a bit about why I'm working in team-based right livelihood still. After all these years. Okay, so the functions of team-based right livelihood are to create an ethical way of earning a living, something that's necessary or valuable to human life. They're also to support a simple life. We can think about that in all sorts of ways. They're also an opportunity to develop friendships. They are a way of the generosity, really, in action. They're a way of creating money and then giving it away to fund Dharma projects, creating resources to give the gift of the Dharma. And Subhuti, in his talk on, or little talk in a booklet called Roads to Freedom, there's a little talk called Bodhisattvas in the Marketplace, and he talks about a fifth function, which is exemplification. And those five things got me thinking about the four Sanghavastus, which are the four means of unification or building Sangha. And those four things are generosity, so you can see there's a link, kindly speech, beneficial activity, and exemplification. So the functions, really, of team-based right livelihood are a way of practicing, I think, the four Sanghavastus. So it's like a team as a mini sangha. So the first one, creating an ethical way of earning a living, or something that's necessary, valuable for human life. Well, this is a kind of extension, really, of the one of the limbs of the Eightfold Path, right, livelihood. Bhante extended it from not just being to avoid a negative or unethical means of livelihood. He actually extended it to actually, creating an ethical way that was actually valuable, not just something to be avoided, but something to practice as valuable. A bit like with the precepts, you know, emphasizing the positive precepts, not just what we're trying to move away from. So I think that's quite important. So for me, this aspect of team-based right livelihood is really important. So it's, as well as looking at how I'm acting, it's also looking at the, you know, the impact on other people, on the world, and also seeing how I can contribute to it through my work at Lama's Pajamas. And so for us as a team, it's us looking at our ethical practice, but also the effect of what we're doing on the world. So each week we do a dedication ceremony. We also chant the refuges and precepts. We also do a team metta bhavana, which I'll mention again probably when I'm talking about the friendship bit. We do particular things and we check in a bit. We don't check in every day, but we do, you know, talk about our practice. We also study together. All of those things, I think, have an effect. But I also think this particular function is about engaging with the world in creative ways. And some words from Rumi, the poet, came to mind when I was thinking about that. And it's, let the beauty we love be what we do. So I spend a lot of time at work. So I am inspired by beauty, and I want to bring that beauty into what I do, whatever I do. It's like, how do we create things? Well, in a way, we have to do them. Beauty isn't an abstract thing. It's like we can bring beauty into being. I'm also very, I'm inspired by trying to think globally, but also act locally, which I think is something Bhante's probably said. So I want to make a positive contribution. And I have been inspired, you know, in my early years, I was very inspired to try and change the world. That was quite a big inspiration for me when I was younger. But I guess just over many years of practice, not even many, I think even at the beginning I saw that I needed to also change myself. So that was quite important. And then I think trying to do that with others is quite a challenge. And Lama's Pajamas is a small charity shop in the East End of London. So it is small. It's just a small place, really. And it's a fairly new team-based right livelihood. It started about five and a half years ago. It's close to the LBC, which I have to say is a real boon. We're really lucky to be so near the Buddhist Centre and to have the support of people from the LBC. But it's also like an amazing sort of, it's like a microcosm of the world, really. And for me, I guess it's where what I do has most effect. So there's a rich array of people there, all nationalities, ages, characteristics, range of incomes, reasons for shopping there, lots of regular customers. So it does feel like we're building a community. We're more than just a shop. We're building relationships with people who may never set foot inside the LBC. So, I mean, one thing is we're right next to a mosque. And so quite a lot of Muslims come into our shop. And I was reflecting today just on seeing the news in Brussels, just how important it is that we're building relationships and do build relationships with people from our community, people who may never, as I said, go into the Buddhist Centre. And we have a very good relationship with the mosque next door. And also I've noticed more and more Muslims have started to come into the shop as a result of that. One of our customers, our regular customers, Ali, who's from Somalia, says to his young son, "Say hello to your friends." That's what he says every time he brings him into the shop. "Say hello to your friends." And one of our team, Sally, actually speaks Arabic, so that's fantastic. She can actually talk to a lot of our customers in Arabic, which, again, I think makes them feel really welcome, and I think it surprises them. So, that makes a difference. And, you know, it is the East End, and there's also, like, people try and barter, people try and do all sorts of things, because they come from different cultures, you know, and, yeah, there's a few wide boys, you know, they'll try all sorts of things. And so, you know, you do have to be, like, on the ball. You have to be on the ball. All sorts of things can happen there. But we are trying to build relationships always on the basis of metta. Honest, friendly, kind, helpful, serving people all day is like an all-day metta bhavana, if you're able to stay aware. And in that all-day metta bhavana, I guess what I feel we're trying to do is soften, dissolve this sense of self and other. I often notice if I really look at people when they come in, if I don't, you know, if I'm not distracted, if I really take them in, I really see the suffering, I see the joy, I see the different states of mind. You know, you just see quite a lot. And there's also a social aspect. There's some people come into the shop every day. Some of them come in just for a chat. There's an elderly Muslim lady called Mrs. Bibi who comes in. She hardly speaks any English, and every day she asks for a present. And sometimes she asks us to give her money to give her a present. So I recently gave her 50p to buy something in the shop, but she decided she didn't want to buy anything in the shop, so she just took the 50p. So I just let go of that one, and I sort of tease her and say, "Present? Yes." Anyway, so, you know, she obviously feels she can come in and, yeah, It's a place where she can have a little bit of a chat to whatever extent she can. And I find that moving. The other thing is, Lama's Pajamas has a positive effect on the environment. We sell a lot of things that would otherwise end up in the landfill. We reuse a lot. We can also recycle. We have a collection every week. And those things either get passed on to other charity shops, so that might be electrical goods, you know, books, things like that. I'm still aware, though, that some of it ends up in Africa, and I'm still aware that I take quite a lot of rubbish to the bins. So, you know, that is a challenge, and it does make me think about the whole thing of consuming, how much we consume, the endlessness of it. And myself, I have to have a few little slogans to help me, because as I said, I love beauty, I love beautiful objects, and there are lots of those coming in. So the slogans I have to try and help me are appreciate, not appropriate, and if it's better, think of metta. Because there's always a better one that comes in to lamas, a better pair of jeans, a better vase, a better whatever. So, yeah, but I don't really need it. And often I've never even thought of buying it until it comes into the shop. So that's just a way that I work with that. The other thing that I think we manage to do is people who can't necessarily afford to buy expensive things have the opportunity to buy and enjoy them. Well-made, beautiful things, because we do get a lot of beautiful donations. And a lot of people aren't wanting to buy new things anymore. They're wanting well-loved, more interesting things. And yeah, over the time I've been working there, I've definitely noticed that more and more people are coming into the shop. So I think we are having a valuable effect on the world. So the function of supporting a simple life, well, we have a kind of support model. So that's give what you want, give what you can, take what you need, sorry. So there's a general, it feels like to me I've got a very generous retreat allowance, time and money. And, well, in a way, as I've pointed to, it's really the only shop I need to go in apart from to buy food. Pretty much, you know, I've stopped going into shops apart from to do a bit of research, you know. As well as mastering all dharmas, I have to master all labels because they all come into lamas and I have to know how much they all cost. So I do a bit of that, but mostly I don't need to go in shops. So it definitely supports a simple life. But for me, a simple life is an abundant life. My work is satisfying. There's a richness of interactions. And the simplicity gives me the time to meditate, the time to reflect. And it gives me the time to almost rest and be at ease when I'm working. So it's not pressurized particularly. There are times when there's lots of donations. And, you know, of course, there's times when you could see it as stressful. But in a way, it's not really stressful. And if I really think about it, there's always so much space. Any moment, there's always so much space. And this does vary to when I earned more money and I think I spent more money to compensate. So I find that quite interesting. And I also think, in a way, it can exemplify that you don't have to earn a lot of money or own a lot of money to be contented, to be happy. I don't feel I need to be particularly frugal, and I don't feel I have a poverty mentality. And in a way, I think I value even more everything that is unowned, like nature, art, the simple things and pleasures of life seem to mean more and more to me the more I practice. So, opportunities to develop friendship. Well, this relates to all the Sangharavastus. There are lots of opportunities to develop friendship when you're working in a team. And I would say that working together is probably the most difficult practice, but also the most rewarding. Because you're working alongside people, you spend a lot of time with them. It's different to community living even, because with community living you can go into your own room, unless you share of course, but then the person does go out. But at work, they're there a lot of the time, and I guess a lot of my work's been in a small space. When I worked at the Cherry, I worked in a small kitchen. Now I often work in a small stock room. So I really noticed the need to, you know, really rely on people, and also be aware that we sometimes let each other down. There are different personalities, characteristics, strengths, capacities. There's a challenge in that. And this is where the real practice of Sangha is. Because Sangha isn't just a support to practice. In fact, for me, it's a practice itself. And I'm trying to relate to the potential in every person, with kindly eyes, with words and actions, not just relating to them in terms of their role or function at work. So the practice of patience is important, forgiveness, letting go. You know, we do react to each other. Things can just cause a little spanner in the works, as it were. And I found a Tibetan proverb quite useful to remember. I remembered it again today, so I thought I'd share it with you. And it's, don't notice the flea in the other person's hair, and overlook the lumbering yak on your own nose. So we also rejoice in each other. At the end of each day, we rejoice in each other and say something that we've appreciated. And that creates a lot of goodwill. And it creates sangha, really. people light up when you rejoice in them. When I rejoice in a customer or a child who comes into the shop, I see them light up. Because everyone does light up when they feel appreciated. But the other thing about this opportunity to develop friendship is, well, I've noticed recently that since we started doing a team metta-bhavana, which we used to do when I worked at the Cherry and I kind of thought would be a good idea, I've really noticed that having an effect on us as a team. And it's a bit hard to quite put your finger on what that effect is, but we started doing that on a weekly basis and it definitely has an effect. It's like, I guess we're working even more consciously from the inside out in terms of the team, the customers, the people who donate to us, the wider community of Bethnal Green. And also, one of the great things about working in a small team is that we can really take each other in. We can really sort of see, well, does that person need a day off? Even though we all work full time, we can be flexible enough to give people a day off if they really need it. Or last year, we all decided, because we were doing so well, that we would all enable each other to do some courses. I ended up working 4 days a week for 6 weeks and doing a printmaking course. Someone else did a sewing course. And we just enabled each other to follow other things that would sustain us at work. And I think when you work in a small team, you can actually do that. And no one, you know, it's obvious who needs what kind of thing, because you know, you're very much in relationship with each other. So the other thing is, my own experience, I would say that most of my deepest and long-lasting friendships have come out of working with people. And some of the happiest days of my life have been at work. If I think back to my time at Wild Cherry, standing at the cooker, cooking all day breakfast, you know, standing with a friend and just serving and cooking, some of the happiest days of my life. So when I think about that, I sort of, you know, it sort of inspires me to remember that. So moving on to generosity. So as Ratnagosha said, so this is the surplus profits to fund the Dharma. And as Ratnagosha said last year, lamas, well, made a surplus of £52,000. £15,000 of that was from gift aid, and that's after supporting four people. So for one little shop run by four people, it feels great, actually, to be making that amount of money. And at a recent AGM at the Buddhist Centre in Bethnal Green, the treasurer, Yana Deva, was saying that a quarter of the LBC's surplus income comes from Lama's pyjamas. So, yeah, it's generating a lot. And, you know, if I wasn't working in a team, there's no way I could be giving that amount of money. Because if you divide that by four, that's a lot of money, isn't it, for one person to be giving. And obviously it's not literally me doing it because it depends on so many people. But it's great to be part of something that can actually give a lot of money. When I worked in Wild Cherry, we gave something different. But running a vegetarian restaurant, you know, it wasn't the most, it didn't generate loads of income. But it created conditions for Sangha, so it's important in that respect. But it's quite hard to make money in terms of, you know, food really. So, yeah, it's given money to support others, giving the gift of the Dharma at the LBC. And generosity is just, well, it's the beginning of compassion. It's the movement outwards that takes us beyond egotism. And really, the whole shop, Lamas, is functioning completely on generosity, really, dana. We've got nothing to sell if no one generously gives us donations. And we're giving opportunities for people to actually give, and they're glad to be able to give. We're providing a service so they can pass things on. And as I mentioned, the gift aid scheme, you know, the donors know how much their donations have raised, and that means that they see the value, and then they're much more likely to come back and give us to us again. They're often really surprised at how much their bag of what to them is a load of old junk or tat or whatever you want to call it, raises £50 or £100. You know, people are really surprised by that. So I think we have been trying to create this culture of dana. And we also try and give people things for free when we can. Like, someone might come in and say, oh, I'm looking for a lamp, you know, and we can't sell electrical goods. We don't have the space. You have to have them all pat tested. So if someone's looking for one and we've got one, we'll give them it. And they appreciate that. And we also try not to turn any donations away, even if we're snowed under and we don't have a lot of storage space, but we try and, you know, receive them in a way where, yeah, people feel that we value them. And the other thing I'm very aware of, people clear out houses of relatives who've recently died. People, you know, slowly bring in things. And I feel very aware that I want to treat all those objects with care and with love, because, you know, one day that's probably what will happen with my stuff of life. And, I often feel very moved. You know, when it gets to the last few boxes as well, there's something very moving about that. And also a lot of people move in Bethnal Green. It seems to be a very mobile population. So again, we get a lot of things from people who can't take their stuff home. They're going back to Australia or Brazil or somewhere. And I think, you know, generosity, I think we can be really confident in it as a practice. Confident in actions having consequences. I remember at the Cherry, Subhadramati, who I think some of you may have heard her speak a few weeks ago, when I worked with her, she came up with this idea once for Buddha Day that we should, get rid of our till for the day, put a bowl out and just say to people, eat what you want, give what you wish. Now, that was radical. Some people didn't know what to do. They were totally flummoxed. They stood with their dinner and they're like, but how much shall I give? Can you tell me? No, whatever you want. Oh, but how much does it cost? Anyway, they worked it out. But the interesting thing was, we ended up with a bowl full, overflowing with donations, more than we ever took through the till. And when I first went to Lamas, they used to have a sale every year. But they didn't tell anyone about it because they were too worried that all the stock would disappear during the sale and that people wouldn't buy anything before the sale started. But I said, oh no, we've got to start telling people, otherwise how will people ever come? And now what's happened is we advertise in the local paper and we basically have a queue outside the door. It's almost like Harrods, you know, they're all rushing in. And it's great, you know, people love it. They absolutely love the sale. They ask when it is. And I think because everything in the shop is 50% off, They can't seem to quite believe it. What, everything? Like even the really expensive things? You know, so that's why they queue, because they've seen something really good, like, I don't know, something gold in our cabinet, and they think, wow, God, even that's going to be half price. So, yeah, that's really important. So, the other thing, exemplification. So, I think Lamas is an important doorway into the LBC. It communicates the Dharma or plants the seed of the Dharma in a different way. And I think this is exemplification. Well, it's that phrase, caught, not taught, isn't it? It creates an atmosphere. People say, I like this shop. They can't quite say why they keep coming back, but they like it. And I think it's partly just because of what we're trying to exemplify. We're trying to walk the talk, I guess. Practice in action. In the nitty-gritty day-to-day world of the shop. How we sell things. Like if someone asks me honestly for an opinion, well, sometimes I encourage them not to buy something. But at the same time, I'm happy to point things out to people if I think they'll like them. And people notice how we speak to each other, how we speak to the customers. Okay, so a little bit now on why I'm still doing it. I'm still doing it because I was thinking, well, you know, I used to be games captain at school. Is that why? You know, I like teamwork. I guess I like serving something, serving what we love. I see service as an expression of gratitude. And I also think service is a way of self-forgetting, a way of letting go of our preoccupation with me, self, ego. And I think if you serve something, that softens, that starts to dissolve. I'm also inspired by the Zen tradition. I'm inspired by Dogen. And those of you that don't know Dogen, well, he's got this little kind of thing called instructions for the Tenzo, and the Tenzo was the cook in the monastery. And it was usually a senior monk. And, you know, some of the text is about the importance of the small things, how to clean rice, where to put the ladles. It's all about the detail. But, you know, all those things are so important. All that detail adds up to the whole thing, doesn't it? And Dogen observes the old Tenzo spreading mushrooms, which is where my talk comes from. And he asks him why he doesn't have some assistance. And the Tenzo says, other people are not me. Which basically is saying no one can really live my life or serve it for me. My work, my suffering, my joy. I'm trying to own it and take responsibility. So yeah, in taking responsibility and serving, I feel kind of free, really. I suppose there's a joy in just totally doing and bearing what I need to do. It's there to do, so why not just do it? Yeah, and then later he asked him why he's working so hard in the sun, those kind of things. But I guess, in a way, what the Tenzo's life suggests to me, the spreading of the mushrooms, for me that's a passionate life. That's a wholehearted life. That demands stamina. He's spending his life preparing food for other people. But actually, in a way, we're all preparing food for other people, aren't we? The food can be typing an email, it could be talking to our children, sorting a bag of donations. It's a kind of preparing of the food. So preparing the food is kind of preparing ourselves, and refining the food is refining ourselves. So yeah, there's something about Dogen and this, yeah, the instructions that I really relate to. And my friend Vajraganta, I'm in a compassionate communication group with her, and she quoted something from Muhammad Ali, which I quite like recently, and she said, the fight isn't won in the ring, it's won in the practice. So that suggests something of the Tenzo. Just want to move quickly on to a little bit of stuff from Subhuti, actually. We're very fortunate at the LBC to have him as our president. And one of the things I was really struck by recently when he came was he talked about the reaction practice. And he talked about anything that makes you stiffen up, tense up. It might be frustration with someone. It might be craving. You know, to ask this question, why does it bother me? And he also said reactions are boreholes to self-clinging, which I actually really like that phrase. So when we react, you know, life is kind of, in a way, refuting our self-importance. And so I find, you know, reflecting on why I'm reacting to certain things really quite interesting, and I try and get interested in them. I think if you can really stay with your reactions, when I really stay with my reactions, I can start to sort of accept them, take responsibility for them, and then begin to unhook. So I find that an interesting practice to just think, why does it bother me? Who is it that's actually getting reactive, frustrated? What is this I in this moment? So yeah, that's quite interesting. And the other thing that's inspired me is Bante gave a seminar some years ago with the guys from Windhorse, and in that he talked about the development of insight, and that insight doesn't depend on particular conditions. It arises within situations of non-insight. Arising depends on situations or conditions that are not those of insight. So, again, I think that's interesting. So I guess the practice for me is partly trying to respond to all things without getting caught. So if I get angry or I get frustrated, not acting from it, but really trying to see into it. And all these things are opportunities to reflect. Disappointment, reactions, suffering, jealousy, all those little things, they're all opportunities to reflect. And in a way, all those things can happen and we cannot be blown about by them, but it all depends on our mental attitude. So I do try and reflect on everything that happens to me, happens in my day-to-day life. I see some of the same old thoughts, the same old habits, but I also see how slowly, by serving something, those get used up, and after a while they become more and more ephemeral. I'm just going to read a little thing from Dogen. And this is about gratitude, and I'm just going to read this and then one other thing to kind of finish really. So, continuous practice day after day is the most appropriate way of expressing gratitude. So that's, yeah, what I feel I'm doing. I'm expressing gratitude. I feel I've been given a lot of gifts in my life, gifts from Bante, gifts from other teachers in the Sangha. I'm trying to kind of hand on in a way the baton. I'm trying to, share what experience I have. And I'm trying to practice because I know what I've received. And I want to give that. And I also like readings from interesting places. So my dad sent me this. My dad's 92, and he sent me this a couple of years ago, and it's called Lessons from Geese. And I live quite near a canal in London where there are a lot of geese, so I watch the geese quite a bit. So there's a few facts and a few lessons from geese, which I think, in a way, give us a bit of a flavour of Sangha. So fact one, as each goose flaps its wings, it creates an uplift for the birds that follow. By flying in a V formation, the whole flock adds 71% more range than if each bird flew alone. Lesson, people who share a common direction and sense of community can get where they are going quicker and easier because they are travelling on the trust of one another. Fact two, when a goose falls out of formation, it suddenly feels the drag and resistance of flying alone. It quickly moves back into formation to take advantage of the lifting power of the bird immediately in front of it. If we have as much sense as a goose, we stay in formation with those headed where we want to go. We're willing to accept their help and give our help to others. Fact three, when the lead goose tires, it rotates back in the formation and another goose flies to the point position. Lesson. It pays to take turns doing the hard tasks and sharing leadership. As with geese, people are interdependent on each other's skills, capabilities and unique arrangements of gifts, talents or resources. Fact four, and I really like this one. The geese flying in formation honk to encourage those up front to keep up with their speed. Lesson. We need to make sure our honking is encouraging. In groups where there is encouragement, productivity is much greater. Individual empowerment results from quality honking. So keep honking. Fact 5. When a goose gets sick, wounded or shot down, two geese drop out of formation and follow it down to help and protect it. They stay with it until it dies or is able to fly again. Then they launch out with another formation or catch up with the flock. Lesson. If we have as much sense as geese, we will stand by each other in difficult times as well as when we are strong.